This Week in Tennis.
Welcome to This Week in Tennis. My name's Phil Nasons. He's Craig Doyle, and you're listening to the best handicapping team in the world. No one is better than us. I can prove it. All you have to do is listen to every one of our shows. We give all our picks for free this season, and we have an outstanding record. I think it is, anyway, of 291, 149, and 0, with 74-plus money underdogs. Craig, what's happening with our record? And we've been struggling a little bit.
Yeah, we have, but you got to look at what we've played the last few weeks since the U.S. Open. We have played a lot of dogs. We are so far ahead that we've decided to take a chance on a number of dogs. And, you know, you can look at the numbers for Indian Wells and say those aren't particularly high win rates, but the ones that we've hit have all been dogs. They've all been good money dogs that we've picked on. So where we've lost one, we've won one. It's been one of those tournaments, but we're not winning on favorites. We're winning on big money underdogs, and that's carrying us along quite nicely through this late Indian Wells tournament.
That's exactly right. And this is our season finale, Craig, because after Indian Wells, I don't have much interest in the rest of the season, to be honest with you. It's weird. You know, you've got the European swing. I guess we have a couple indoor events for Masters events. But at the end of the day, Indian Wells has taught me that this pandemic has messed things up completely. The players don't seem interested, at least the top players. And there's really no point in continuing on with the picks. We'll get ready for the Australian Open, and we'll get ready to make more cash for these people.
Yeah, well, Indian Wells normally comes around March when there's our kind of big break between the Australian Open and the French Open, Roland Garros, in May. So you have your Australian Open in January, you have Roland Garros in May traditionally, and you have that Indian Wells and Miami tournaments in March, then a few Masters tournaments in Europe. And people are, you know, they're excited to... It's the start of the season. If you've not had a good Australian Open, Indian Wells is a great place to go and make some cash, improve your ranking points. This time of the season, it's not ideal for the players. You know, it's been a long season. You've just come off the back of this massive U.S. Open swing that went through Canada, Cincinnati, then to New York, and then, you know, you're coming back out to play again on the hard courts. It's not ideal timing, so you can't blame a few of the players for... maybe being a little bit tired.
Yeah, a lot tired. You know, all these restrictions. You know, that's a very stressful life. You're traveling throughout the world during a pandemic. You know, you walk into stadiums. Some have crowds. Most of the women's matches don't. And it is what it is. But this is our last show of the year. It's been a fantastic year. Again, 291, 149 with 74 plus money dogs. That means if you were roughly playing at home, you would have won probably around 15, 16 grand betting $100 every one of our picks. And that's not too shabby for free for listening and putting up with us for however long we do each podcast. The tennis hype machine, Craig, especially on the women's side, they're jamming Coco Gauff, Leila Fernandez, and Emma Raducanu down our throats. And I'm not so sure they're tasty enough to swallow alone.
I think you would be right. I mean, Emma Raducanu, of course, can say that she's won the U.S. Open, so she's been there, done it. But, yeah, Coco Gauff in particular. How long has it been since Coco Gauff's been on the scene now? I mean, is that 3 years now that we've had Coco Gauff fever? We've been told that she's going to win Grand Slams. I was being told last week that she was going to win Grand Slams, and then she got knocked out in the second round of Indian Wells. So what gives with Coco Gauff? I think Leila Fernandez is exactly the same thing.
Just a pusher. You know, she takes advantage of others' mistakes, and that's great. But at the end of the day, of the three, though, because of her style of play, and she's pretty tenacious, if she can stay healthy, I think Fernandez is going to be the best of those three. You saw what happened with Emma Raducanu. We had you listen to this show. You'd have cracked a plus 310 dog. Cesnovich knocked her out. That was a call we made easily. And the reality is, if you make Emma Raducanu move left or right, you're going to probably wind up beating her. You know, at the US Open, and what a fabulous run, right? 10 straight matches. Hats off to her. Wow, that was incredible. I've never seen a qualifier do that. But look what happened. She's controlling the middle of the court, and everything fell her way. And God bless her, she won the US Open. She can say forever and a day that she's a Grand Slam winner. I don't think these other two are going to be able to say that. But again, I think Fernandez will have the better of the careers because she depends on others' mistakes, whereas the other two make too many.
Well, absolutely, and let's not get ahead of ourselves. All three of these are very, very young women. When it comes to age on the tennis tour, Raducanu obviously is going through a bit of a crisis because they made the decision to swap out coaches and they haven't appointed anyone. So in terms of her setup, there needs to be some work done there. Coco Gauff is still, I have no idea what she's doing with the coaching setup. It's not professional in my opinion. Yeah, Fernandez looks a little bit ahead of the other two in terms of longevity at the minute, but you know, we've seen plenty of players play the way Fernandez does and never really win anything. You know, and I'm looking at people like Serra Errani and the likes of tenacious players who dig in and defend well, and you know, that often doesn't win you the big ones, unfortunately. So yeah, I think it's a whole WTA problem. They have no stars. They have no drawing power. They're desperate to put someone's face on the posters. They tried with Osaka. That backfired. It's caused them a lot of problems. Anybody else, and I'm not disrespecting anyone at the top of the women's game, but if you go down that top 10 and you were to put up a poster advertising an event with one of those players, two of those players in a country that they're not from, you're not going to draw a crowd. It's there's no stars, there's no star power, there's no must-have ticket to see these people. That's just the unfortunate nature of business on the WTA tour at the minute. They need a Serena Williams, they need a Maria Sharapova, they need someone who can be the face of the brand and can sell tickets. All those events that are WTA only are going to struggle to attract people. And I think you probably have seen a bit of that at Indian Wells.
Not just a bit, you know, and the bottom line is none of them made it past the second week except into the second week except for Leila Fernandez. You know, and one of the things people write to me, they say, you are so negative towards these young people. Pay attention to what this show is all about. It's about picking winners, sports betting. You know, I don't give a crap about the hype. That's noise from the outside. We don't pay attention to that noise. We're about to tell you our handicapping process in a minute here. But at the end of the day, is that tennis fans eat this up and then they buy into it and they lose their money behind these players. We don't want that to happen. It's not a personal thing. You know, Jamie Hampton, for example, I don't have any problems with her. She doesn't like what I have to say, but that's okay. But I like to thank her because our listeners made more money off her tennis career than she did. And that's what we're trying to do. We're not picking on these kids. I've been in the tennis business for 38 years. Bottom line is this: I think the world of a lot of these kids. I know quite a few of them, actually. The whole point is this is a show based on tennis betting. So I don't give a crap what the WTA puts on their posters. I know that you don't. And our job here at This Week in Tennis is to point those things out to help you sort through the noise and pick winners and to profit instead of giving the bookie your money. And we're pretty good at it, I would think. So don't take this negatively, because it's not nice to do that. But at the end of the day, these are players, you get it personal. We're not personal with these, but I don't care. You know what, at the end of the day, is we want you to win money. We don't want you to give away your money. And we see that every day. If you played Emma Raducanu in the first round of Indian Wells, you were a sucker. Anyone who with any sense in their head doesn't touch that. You can't play a favorite like that. She would have killed you. And a lot of people, Craig, they play parlays. That parlay right there, that girl killed a lot of tickets. And we're trying to prevent that. So if we sound a little negative, it's really because we want you to cash for flash. And we've done an amazing job of it this year. Now, Coco Gauff, she's had her issues. You know, she doesn't have a stable team behind her. That's pretty obvious. Emma Raducanu has no stable team. You know, she's looking for a coach, and I wish whoever it is well, because I read somewhere that her father, Craig, was considering hiring a coach for each specific shot. Are you out of your mind? Is that real? You know how confused that girl's going to be? She's played a total of five pro tournaments. She got hot and won the biggest one, the US Open. But I think what you saw at the first round of Indian Wells is probably who Emma Raducanu is.
I think the idea of having multiple coaches is quite interesting. It's something that I think you might see in a player who is maybe the other side of 30 and they're desperately looking to improve on some aspect of their game. Maybe they're going through a crisis on serve and they bring in a serve coach, or maybe they're having issues with the backhand or something, and they bring in someone who can, you know, play the similar backhand to what they play. And they're looking for a bit of advice, but I don't see the model of bringing in, you know, three, four different coaches to work with someone who is at the very beginning of their career being too successful, because you're going to have different coaches with different opinions on various things. It's too many messages coming in, too many messages for the player to process. I think what they got to do is they got to let Raducanu play a bit and see what her strengths and weaknesses are, because she looked like she hit a decent backhand. She looked like she hit a really nice forehand. Her serve was pretty good. You know, all the components were there. Trying to fine tune all of them with different people was going to be a really, really difficult thing to do. They should let her have a year on the tour, see where things go. No pressure to win anything else. Just do as she does. And then at the end of this year, and you know, this time next year, then is the time to review where things didn't work. You know, did she have difficulties on the clay? Were there problems hitting that forehand cross court? Was she not getting enough elevation on the backhand down the line? You could pick at all areas of the game afterwards and then pick the ones you need to improve, not trying to preempt the situation and have this unbeatable player up front. That's not going to happen. That's just going to be a disaster. It's going to be a waste of money and time for a lot of people. Probably result in a lot of heartbreak and a lot of ill feelings. So better just to relax, see how things go, and then look to fine tune afterwards.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, if I were her, I wouldn't even hire a coach for that year. I would just go out there with my mom and dad and go out there and hit. She's going to get a wild card into any tournament that she needs to get into. Her ranking right now, I don't know what it is, 22. She has a ton of points to defend next year at the US Open. I would concentrate on understanding the tour, being out there. The last thing that I would have done, had I been advising her, is to pull out of the Kremlin Cup the way she did at the last minute. That ain't good, especially for a tournament that's pretty good caliber of competition. But more importantly, those people were marketing her and her appearance. This is your chance to see the girl who tore everybody a new one for 10 consecutive matches in Flushing Meadows. So, but she pulled out, Craig, and I have this funny feeling that we're not going to see her until she goes to Abu Dhabi and plays an exhibition against Belinda Bencic. That's what I think. I don't think you're going to see her again. She looked startled. She looked dumbfounded. She looked like a typical kid who got her ass whipped and can't figure out why. A lot of that has to do with her coaching previously. She's had a bunch of them. She's probably had more voices in her head than probably Charles Manson. So what they need to do is settle it in, rein them in. She's got some good advisors. Jeremy Bates is a good is a knowledgeable guy. Tim Henman is a knowledgeable guy. Andy Murray is a very knowledgeable guy. Of course, he's busy clocking guys too. We'll get into that in a minute. But at the end of the day, for her, she needs to figure it out, and she needs to kind of come to grips with some things. That was a great tournament, but that's over now. She'll have to worry about the US Open again a year from now when she has to defend all those points. This is the year you're going to find out who she is. I personally think that she's probably who she is. The girl that played against Sasnovich is perhaps the girl that she is. That's probably who the player she was, because she wasn't a big sensation in juniors, was she? Was she a lot? Was she ballyhooed much over there, Craig?
She didn't come out of left field like people knew who she was, and they had seen her in juniors, but she wasn't, the top junior that people were saying, oh, this is going to be a top player. But you know how juniors are. Sometimes the top juniors barely make a scratch on the tour, and vice versa. People who didn't really kick it as juniors, they didn't win things, they tend, sometimes to go to the top of the tour. People develop a little bit later. But yeah, she wasn't like, we were talking the last few years about Konta potentially winning a slam. She had a good run for a year. But there's not really been a player on the women's tour coming through the juniors that anyone over here said, oh yeah, for sure, she's top 50 guaranteed, maybe top 20. We've not had that player. And that's perhaps why there's such longevity towards the likes of Heather Watson, who, let's be honest, is not pulling up too many trees herself. She's been there for a while. She's never going to win anything major. But there was never that feeling that, Harriet Dart or Katie Swan or any of those players coming through were ever really going to make it. So Raducanu, yeah, we knew she was there. She's maybe elevated a little bit quicker than people thought to where she is. She wasn't like earmarked as someone who's going to win the US Open or Wimbledon. So it's been a pleasant surprise more than an expectation.
That's just it. Now, Coco Gauff has been jammed down our throats. Again, I don't have any personal feelings either way about Coco Gauff. I wish her well. I really do. But the WTA hype machine has come through, and she's pushed this girl in everyone's faces as the next star. And sports bettors recognize that name. Oh, she'll win. And click that X, check that box. And you can't do that with these girls. They're teenagers, first of all. Second of all, they don't have the experience. They're playing grown women. Okay, Coco Gauff dominated the ITF circuit at age, what, 13? And she's been jammed down our throats ever since. And the reality is, what has she won on the tour thus far? What has she won? Hardly anything. Anything to speak of. In fact, what she does is she's an upset waiting to happen because Coco Gauff is generally a favorite. And let's face it, go look at her matches. Don't believe me. It's got nothing to do with the color of her skin, her gender, her preferences. It has everything to do with tennis. It has everything to do with the noise surrounding her. And that noise, that hype machine, is bigger than her actual game. I mean, this is a girl who couldn't even serve. She could hardly hit a forehand, Craig. And people are throwing their hard-earned cash on her to win. And they're losing and they're getting disappointed. And instead of, going, wait a second, maybe we have to look at things, they don't have to because it's a recognizable name. Look at Maria Sakkari. Nobody knows who she is. Really? Hardly any. Yesterday, Craig, I was at the tennis, and there was this young girl hitting balls with her dad who grew up in the French Tennis Federation. He was a terrific player. And yeah, you could see that when he was hitting with his kid. He was teaching her. I'm going to end up coaching her now too. But at the end of the day, Craig, I asked the girl, I say, who's your favorite player? And she says, Emma Raducanu. Okay, great. Why? I said, what about Maria Sakkari, who's made two Grand Slam semifinals and comes from a very tiny country? What about her? She goes, oh, I don't really know who she is. Those are the girls who are out there winning. Those are the girls who are out there ups or good prices on them in sports betting. And you got to take that and run with it. You know, that's what we do here at This Week in Tennis. Leila Fernandez, she's had a little bit of hype behind her too. You know, she's been on a tour a couple years, and she made that great run to the finals of the U.S. Open, and now people are going gaga over her. The difference is, though, is players make enough mistakes that she can capitalize. She can go three sets. She's fit, and of the three young girls, she has the most. At least it seems to me, anyway, the most stable team behind her, Craig.
She does, and let's be honest, you were onto her a long time before the US Open, and then we cooled a little bit on her because we were stopping getting the prices that we were getting earlier this year when you first picked up on her and she was delivering the goods for us. But I don't see a winner in her either. I don't see a repeat Grand Slam champion in her. I see quarterfinals, maybe semifinals, but I'm not buying into the hype on Fernandez. I think she had a good tournament, like Raducanu did at the U.S. Open. But I don't, you know, if I'm sitting here today and you said to me, "Do you think she'll be in the final at the Australian Open?" No, not for me. I'd be lucky if I said to you, "She'll get beyond the fourth round." I genuinely don't think that the hype is justified when it comes to her. I would be really surprised at any point next year if she gets to a semi-final or a final of the Grand Slam.
And don't get me wrong, though, and don't get us wrong, that's an amazing feat for a teenager to get to the third or fourth round of a major. It's an amazing feat, and it should be congratulated. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about picking winners, and we're not calling them losers. We're not saying to, because I get a lot of email, "Oh, you're so harsh on these people." Well, yeah, because we have to wade through the hype, and we have to let our customers see these things. Otherwise, they're going to lose money, and so are we, because, you know, we're going to lose them, and we're going to lose you, the listener, because we're not giving you the right information. And that kind of gets into the hype or the our handicapping process, because someone asked about that. You know, they follow us, they've cashed, and we never really talk about the process because, you know, like last week we gave out 65 picks, the week before we gave out about 90. You know, we give a lot of picks out on this show. I mean, I know some people say it's too many, only want five, but we give them all out because we also realize that we have people who play fantasy tennis on DraftKings, FanDuel, and the like, and there's a lot of matches involved, and they're looking for some value. And I guess that's the very first thing I look at, Craig. My first thing, I look at the lines. I look for value. I look for a mistake in the lines. What is your first thing that you do?
Yeah, similar. I gotta go down there and I gotta get have a look at the prices, and I have to look for somebody who I know's on form and I'm gonna get value on them. Or I alternatively I look for someone who's highly ranked, and I know that they're gonna be a massive favorite, but perhaps they're not playing so well, or the surface just doesn't suit them, or I know that they've had a recent injury or whatever, and then I'll look at who they're playing and try to see if it's a good enough price on the dog, and see if that dog's had a little bit of form recently that I think that they'll beat that top player. That's usually my starting point. I obviously, like you, I have a number of players that I keep a closer watch on, that they're maybe not ranked in the top 10, they're maybe not ranked in the top 20, but guys who suit the surface, clay courters, or guys who play well on a hard court. In fact, an example from last week that's a really good one is that playing a big server at Indian Wells didn't really make sense to me because the court plays so slow. I mean, it traditionally plays slow every year. So a guy who's got a big serve probably isn't going to be able to smash the ball through the court. He's not going to be a mover and a defender, so he's not going to win many of the long points. So guys like John Isner or Riley Opelka, these kind of guys are not a good play on that particular surface. So having a little bit knowledge of the venue and what the court speed's like really does help you to weed out some of those guys who are higher ranked, but maybe not as big favorites as the sports book makes them out to be.
And that's exactly right, man. That is exactly right. And we talked about this on last week's show or two, when we previewed Indian Wells. You know, one of the things that I mentioned is all the years I spent out in Vegas is that that air is thin. It takes a while to get used to it. So we like players who have already played a match. And then we saw we cashed with some plus money dogs, specifically Sasnovich, right? Well, that was a plus 310 dog. That's a dog we chase. And the reason we do is we understand these girls. When Emma Raducanu won that championship, she put a giant X on her back. The way she dominated the field put a giant X on her back. The other thing it did is allow coaches to break the game down and break her game down. That's what I've been doing for the last 38 years is coaching tennis, okay? I don't hate tennis. I love tennis. That's another thing that people say about us, Craig, that we hate the sport. No, we don't. No, we don't. Not at all. At least I know I don't, and Craig doesn't. I know Craig doesn't either. I mean, Craig will speak for himself in a second, but I've been in 84 countries because of that tennis racket. Otherwise, I'd be just another kid from Saginaw, Michigan in the streets probably. The end of the day is I love the sport, but I also understand that there's a market out there for sports betting for analysts who actually understand, one, how sports betting works, just like Craig just told you how it works, and two, understands the game. So when you see a tournament like Indian Wells, now in the spring, it's probably not as windy there. And that's a different time of year. October is very windy out there in the desert. And you have to take advantage of that. And one of those plays is to go against a guy like Riley Opelka, to go against a John Isner, to go against a Daniil Medvedev like I think Craig did yesterday, and took Grigor Dimitrov. Because big servers don't pan out too well there, especially in the fall. Now, maybe in the spring, it might be a little different, but you have to understand that. And that's what I try to do is I don't look at a kid's record. I look overall anyway, I look at a kid's record on that surface and under those conditions. That's the second thing that I look for, surface and conditions. How do players respond under those conditions? You know, you've got indoor tennis coming up. That's where you're going to see the bigger servers dominating because there's no elements to stop them. Nothing keeps them from doing their thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had that with Opelka and the wind situation last week. You know, he caught a day where the conditions weren't favorable to him, and it didn't go particularly well for him. When you come inside, you don't have the elements at play. You don't have the same humidity. You don't have the wind conditions. You know, they're pumping air into these venues. There's no sort of breeze. They're not outdoor venues that are turned into indoor venues with a roof like at the Slams. These are actual arenas where they're playing inside. The court speeds sometimes are one thing you got to watch because a lot of these venues are temporary courts, so sometimes you got to be a little bit careful and maybe sometimes wait until the second day to get a read on the court speed, because there have been times like at the ATP Tour Finals where one year the court plays particularly quick, the next year it doesn't play as quick. That's something you do have to wait on, but it's certainly in terms of conditions indoors, a lot of the conditions are negated and that levels the playing field and certainly plays into the bigger servers a lot better. And then it becomes a case from there, you know, if the court's playing quickly, then you want to get on your big servers and your big hitters. The court's playing not so quickly, then you want to switch and have a look at your more defensive players. You know, your Diego Schwartzman type players are going to thrive more when the conditions are a little bit slower so that they can run the ball down.
Well, that's exactly right. And there's so many other things that go into play, like head-to-head results, but on the surface that they're facing each other on that day. Now, we had a situation this week where I think it was Grigor Dimitrov is what, undefeated, 4-0 against Medvedev, now 5-0. Those kind of things, you know, maybe one of those was on clay. But that, to me, didn't matter so much because I also, when I look at those splits and those head-to-head results, I also look at a player's experience. You can see Gregor Dimitrov was another guy who was pretty overhyped, I thought. But a lot of that had to do with his off-court relationship with Maria Sharapova. But at the end of the day, that kid's been playing pro tennis a very long time. These are kids who seize that know how to seize the day. This is a great opportunity. We're going to talk about Dimitrov in a minute, but look for players too that have been around long enough to realize they're in a good situation and have the stats behind them, the head-to-head stats behind them, to back that up. I mean, it's one thing to have Coco Gauff, for example, or I'll use a man so we're not picking on anybody. It's one thing for Cam Norrie to have trouble against fellow lefties or his left-handed contemporaries. It's quite another when he is serving out of the moon and he's playing against a kid who doesn't have his experience and doesn't have sees that same opportunity in front of him that Cam Norrie has seemingly done this 2 weeks in Indian Wells, Craig.
Right, absolutely. So there's another great point. Know who plays with what hand, effectively, right? Like
Right.
there's a lot of these right-handed players don't like playing against left-handed players. They find it awkward on the serve. It feels unnatural to them. It puts them in a position where they're playing, backhands into the forehand, something that they may not be comfortable with. And you tend to find it's not an issue for the top players. They play a backhand just as well as they play a forehand. But there's plenty of guys out there. Joe Wilfred Tsonga, who, he got pretty high up the rankings. He was up at number 4, 5, 6 for a while. And he didn't have a great backhand. And a matchup against Nadal was just a nightmare for him, simply because he's been forced to play his backhand into the Nadal forehand. And it's an awkward forehand to hit at the best of times. But when you're not super, super comfortable being forced onto the backhand, it's you have a torrid time, and that's a matchup for you that you really don't want to see. And I think like the head-to-head really showed that with Tsonga and Nadal. I think Nadal's won like 10, Tsonga's won 4, and he certainly hasn't won any on the clay, that's for sure. So that's a
Unlike a lot, most people haven't against Rafael Nadal,
Well, but yeah, that's true,
though.
right? But
Right, but the point still remains, Craig. The point still remains. Because we like to chase underdogs, but a Wilfried Tsonga who's had a great career, let's face it, he has had a great career. He's had longevity, he has that experience, but he also doesn't have the confidence to beat Rafael Nadal. Because on clay or probably anywhere, well, maybe on an indoor hard court he would have back in his prime, but again, it's all about those things for me. And current form is another. I mean, you come in blistering, you might get a better shot at this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the last time, and you're right, he did win one on an indoor hard court. I was there at the ATP Tour Finals when he did beat Nadal indoors on the hard court, and it was a battle, but he was a superior player that day. And you're going back to all the points again that you've just made. Experience, knowledge, real key things in some of these matchups. It's always great having to go on these wonder kids and. We've had a few good bets on Jannik Sinner this year, but you'll notice Jannik Sinner's won plenty of tournaments, but he ain't won many tournaments when he's been playing with the big boys. And it's not because he's not as good a player, or he's not going to be as good a player as a Medvedev or a Zverev. It's because these guys have got years of experience that he doesn't have. They know in the key moments not to play a particular shot or to stick to a routine that works for them and that brings them success. Whereas these kids, they don't really have that experience, and then in the key moments they get muscled out of games that in a few years' time that they'll probably win.
That's just it. And we have a lawnmower in the background. Wonderful. But anyway, that's just it. Experience matters at the top level. I know a lot of people who bet on challengers. Now, I don't mess with that at all. We never talk about challenger events or any of those other things. We never do. But at the end of the day, a record And experience matters. I have a friend, Jamian, the kid who comes on my show. I'm not a kid anymore. He's almost 40 years old, but I've known him a long time. Anyway, he's playing a little tennis now and challengers. He said they just go by the record and they've been crushing. And you can do that too, but not at the highest levels. So when we see these things like an Emma Raducanu or whoever, we knew that she was in great form. She'd won 10 straight matches on the hard courts. But we also know that Sasnovich is a 30-year-old player, right? And she's much better, more experienced. Maybe she's not the better player, but she's more experienced and she seized an opportunity and she wasn't probably buying all the hype, because tennis players buy into it too. And usually in a negative way, though, like in this case. But at the end of the day, you have all those things together. And then sometimes I just go with my gut. Hey, this kid volleys well. If he can get the ball down, if he can hit the ball, his approach down the line, he's got a shot at this thing. His volleys are good. His approaches are good. This kid don't pass as well, especially when he has to move. Kind of like what they did to Raducanu in the first round. Kind of like, what we were saying on the show. But that's my process. Do you have anything else to add, Craig, before we get into this?
No, not really. I think you've covered all of the bases pretty well.
And you did too. Jannik Sinner was your discovery, and you were watching him like a hawk. And we got some great prices. And again, for the last time, it's got nothing to do with Emma Raducanu or Coco Gauff or Leylah Fernandez or our personal feelings about such people. It's all about finding value. And these girls are overhyped, and that means they're overpriced. Most people who bet on tennis that I've discovered don't know a thing about the sport. They just want to bet. So we try to sort through the noise and help them out. Now, we've got matches today beginning at 2 o'clock, and Nicolas Basilashvili is taking on Stefanos Tsitsipas at 2, and Basilashvili is a +310 dog. Stefanos Tsitsipas is a -425 favorite. We can't really look at experience here, Craig, because Basilashvili has a lot of it, probably more than Tsitsipas. But Tsitsipas is still a -425 dog, and one of the rules I have in my life is never in tennis go over -400.
Yeah, I really can't disagree with you there at all. It's just one of those you look at it and there's not really a play, is there?
No.
And Tsitsipas has a winning record against him as well. As far as I remember, I think it's 2-0. They've not played for a couple of years, but there's not a lot of incentive to come in here. For the show, we could say play Basilashvili, but neither of us are going to play him because we both think Tsitsipas is going to win.
Well, that's just it. And here's the other thing, though, is we tell you flat out we're not touching this match. But we always give a pick for the show because we know, again, that we have fantasy players playing this and they might get some value out of it, maybe. It's an option for them. And we also keep that as part of our record. Even the ones we're not touching, we still eat because that's how we are. We're transparent. You know that. You know us. We've been around a long time. Man, you could probably play the totals on this. Let me see what the odds are on the total sets. Okay, for over 2.5, it's +190 for Basilashvili. Under 2.5, which means it's basically a straight set win, is -310 for Tsitsipas. Does this go three sets? Can Basilashvili get this thing to three sets? And that's one of the questions I always ask. And I don't think, I honestly don't think he can because Tsitsipas plays pretty well on clay. This is a slow court with a good bounce, and it's a funny weather with the wind. It's kind of like Paris in the spring, right? Minus the rain.
It is. I think he just plays straight sets on Tsitsipas here and hope that he gets the job done, as we expect. I don't think there's a lot of great plays here other than that. And -310, that's not an enticing price, but for the benefits of the show, season finale, let's play it.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. You're gonna play at Basilashvili?
Now I'm gonna play, sorry, plus 3 10 on, was it Tsitsipas on straight set?
Straight sets, yeah, I think it's if he wins, it's minus 310.
Minus eight. Yeah, okay, let's play that. Straight sets and Tsitsipas. I mean, it's not it's not great money, right? But I that's the result I can see, and I can't see any other result on this.
No, nor can I. And that doesn't take anything away from how what Nicholas has done this season, because he has been pretty good at times. But that's just the way it is. Now, the second match of the day, and we're going to get into tomorrow's Dimitrov-Nori match in a minute, because I think Craig is on to something with this one. Taylor Fritz, plus 400. Alexander Zverev, minus 600. Another untouchable match if you're going to play the favorite. You can't. I mean, minus 600 will kill you if you lose that one. What do you like about this? First of all, that's a pretty big price on Fritz, all things considered. What do you think? Do you think he's worth a shot at four plus 400? Do you think he's got a chance?
No, because last week when we talked about this event, I thought, and you thought that Zverev would possibly win this. And it was either last week or the week before when we touched on this tournament, and then we both sort of thought, yeah, this one, we don't fancy Medvedev for this. We think Zverev is probably going to be a really good shout to win this, and I don't see Zverev getting knocked out here. He might have more difficulties with Tsitsipas, but I don't see it. Fritz troubling him at all, and that's why your minus 600 is not an unrealistic price for the sportsbook to be given on a guy who is one of the best players on the tour at the minute, and I think he's only lost like one match in his last 20 or something. It's he's on a real hot streak, so I just can't play Fritz. There's nothing about Fritz that you want to play here.
Nothing, not even in the straight sets. If it goes three sets, it's plus 210 for Fritz. If it goes straight sets, it's minus 350 for Zverev. That's the better value, but I could see Fritz sneaking a set out of this, depending on the weather and how it affects his serve. But I don't see any way you can touch this match. I would probably even leave that alone, but I'm going to take Zverev for the sake of the show. Craig, minus 600. I mean, if it's an upset, it is. It is what it is. But I don't see that happening for a lot of reasons. I just don't see it. Now, tomorrow, this is going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to hearing what you say about this match. Grigor Dimitrov is a minus 120 favorite. Cam Nori, who's been really good, is a minus 110 underdog, Craig. What do you think about that?
I think like there's two places between them in the rankings. These guys are both in a similar place. The problem with that comparison is that Dimitrov's not really moved for a while, where Norrie is going the absolute other direction. He's on the upwards curve. They played actually earlier this year in Miami, and Norrie won in straight sets. I think like Norrie is probably quite a difficult matchup for Dimitrov. Like Dimitrov's played really well this week in stages. He's almost had a little mini resurgence. Will that be enough against Norrie? I am not so sure. I just think like the price you're getting offered on Norrie here is really, really good. So that's going to be my play.
Okay, now I agree with everything that you just said. Now, total sets over 2.5, going 3, plus 130. Under 2.5, minus 205. My play is going to be the over 2.5. Now, one of the things that Cam Nori benefits from is being left-handed. One of the things I think is a strength at times for Dimitrov is his backhand. Now, he plays a one-handed backhand, if I'm not mistaken. That's correct, right?
He does, yes.
And see, that one-handed backhand gives him more range to get that sweeper on the ad court. And that's something that I'm looking at here. And honestly, I haven't seen Grigor Dimitrov play this well in a couple of years. And now I respect what Cam Norrie's done because, we haven't always been supportive of him on this show. But I think my play is going to be it's actually in the book, it would be called Dimitrov over 2.5 plus 130. That's my play. So, or you could say Dimitrov three sets, whatever. The bottom line is that's the only play I see here because I don't have any idea whatsoever who's going to win, and neither does Vegas because of the low odds. So that's the only play I have, Craig, for that.
Yeah, it's certainly different. It's a little bit away from the traditional what we play here, but it's interesting to see what you've come up with.
Well, the reason is that we have more time. When we do 128 picks, Craig, if we went through each one of these, it would take 7 hours to do the podcast. And you know how tired we are after 128 picks. But this is all part of our handicapping process. And I kind of felt like this would benefit the listener to go that level. Now, we have some interesting matches tonight, the ladies. And none of these girls are overhyped at all. Victoria Azarenka is a minus 195 favorite. She's taken on a very streaky but very hot Jelena Ostapenko, who is a plus 155 dog, Craig. Any love for the dog here?
I find it difficult to play Ostapenko because, as you said, she's so up and down that you never know quite which Ostapenko you're going to be presented with. So it's a real difficult play on Ostapenko, and Azarenka is pretty solid, especially when she's on a little bit of a run. And I just like Azarenka. She's a winner. She's won things. She's won a lot of things. I think, yeah, it's a good play on Azarenka. I think she's going to have one of those weeks, and she might even come away with the title here. It wouldn't be a surprise to me if she did.
That's not a bad price at 190. Now, I'm looking at the total sets. Now, listen to this. A lot of these ladies' matches go three sets. The over, meaning it'll go three sets, is plus 135, Craig. And the under is minus 205. The money says that this is going to be a straight set victory for Victoria Azarenka. You know what, though? The handicapper in me says that they can have yips. We use it, the things that you just said about Jelena Ostapenko. We used to say the same things about Victoria Azarenka. Do you remember? She was undependable. She would get a pedicure, get an infection, and not show up, or she would have a sauna day and something would happen. But I'm intrigued at the over here, Craig. That's a good price. I kind of feel like it could go three sets. Ostapenko has been pretty hot. The matches that I've seen Azarenka play, and admittedly I've only seen a couple of these during this event, she seems like she starts off slow and then kind of catches a second wind. So I'm going to stay with Azarenka at minus 190, but I'm going to give this over 2.5 a shot.
Yeah, again, it's not a bad shout. Like, that's probably quite a good shout on all women's games if you want to enhance your prices to go over 2.5 and then pick your winner, because there's not too many of these matches go out in straight sets.
Not too many at all. Now, this next match is at 10:30 tonight Eastern, which gives you a lot of time to check our homework. Ange Jabeur, minus 150 favorite. Paula Badosa, a plus 120 dog. Wow, that's a tough one because both of these girls, they've let us down in good spots before, and this isn't a bad price for either of these players.
I agree, and not to make it worse, but like, these players have played a couple of times before, and they've both been like three sets with, 7-5 in the third set or 6-4 in the third set. So there's the most recent one, Jabeur did win earlier this year in Miami, but it was 7-5 in the third set. So it was, I think it was 7-6, 7-6, 5, 7-5. It's like, there's nothing, a point either way changes the outcome of that match. Gilbert's been pretty hot recently, actually. She's really 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 gone up there, and I think I saw the other day that she will become the first woman from sort of like the Arab countries to ever make it into the top 10 in the WTA rankings. So she's, breaking a little bit of ground for the Middle East area of the world, which has traditionally not been a tennis hotspot, particularly on the women's side. I like Jabeur, but as you say, like there's so little to choose between these two that it's a little bit of gut feeling here that she's going to be the one that goes through. It's not really based upon any sort of statistical analysis or any form, because both girls have got pretty good form coming in here.
I agree with you. There's no line offered for total sets yet, and there's a reason for that, because they're not going to get burned, because they all know it's going to be a three setter. It's pretty obvious that that's probably where this is going to go. I'm with you on Jabeur. That was my find. One of the things that I missed this year and last year was the Asian swing. We used to crush that and walk out of the season with big money. And we can't do that because Asia's different. It's indoors. Some of them are outdoors. They love to play there. The kids love to play because, they get great presents from the and swag bags from these events. They get to pick up and go shopping in Japan and Hong Kong and China, and they do well there. This place, California, you can't get any value anywhere. But Anshu at -150 is not a bad value, Craig. And that's it. Good stuff, my friend. Good stuff.
Thank you very much. That wraps up for another season, and I shall see you all again come the Australian Open in January, I'm assuming, if it goes ahead.
Yeah, I think it's going to go ahead. I think there's restrictions. I think the Australians bolted early so they could get home before they couldn't go home. So we'll have to keep an eye on the COVID. There'll still be events and whatever, but we're not going to mess with them. We're done for the season. We have a 291-149 record this season with 74 plus money dogs. Several of those dogs were +300 or better. And that's a pretty good record, and we're pretty thrilled. We've had our 10th consecutive winning season at This Week in Tennis. A lot of that has to do with my radio partner, who is absolutely one of the best there is at this. And I'm really privileged, man, to say, call you my friend first. And second, to be working with you every year for 10 freaking years, bro.
And thank you very much for having me. We had an interesting start to this program. It's been an exciting adventure since then, and I'm sure I'll be back next year for our 11th year or whatever. We'll get another successful year, next successful winning year next year too, hopefully.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, it's been a great ride this year. Next year we'll be back. We're going to be selling picks. We're not going to give as many away anymore. It's time for us to get a little extra for all our hard work. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nasis. Thank you so much for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.